If you're anxious about oil selling at $117 per barrel, consider this. Might get worse in a decade. A strategist for Shell Oil says demand will go up while oil supplies get harder to find.
We anticipate that you'll begin to see a plateauing of easily accessible conventional oil and gas around about the 2015-2020 type of period.
That's Jeremy Bentham, who's a forecaster for Shell. His latest report looks out to the year 2050, and it outlines two very different possibilities for the future. As we'll hear in a moment, one scenario doesn't seem so bad. But then there's a scenario that Bentham calls the scramble.
Well, it's an evocative term around the dynamics in which a focus on supply security drives a lot of decision-making.
I want to try to define supply security as you understand it. What you're saying is China's worried about their future supply of oil, so they decide that they better be friendly with Iran, or the United States is worried about
the supply of oil.
And talks with Saudi Arabia.
Yes, and so that can kick off a dynamic where the tensions are perceived to be a fight between nations, and hence a scramble for supply. The demand side is postponed in terms of being managed in that scramble outlook.
Instead of worrying about conservation or alternative energies, people just grab what oil there is.
That's right. Well, not just oil, but other forms of energy as well.
When you use the term scramble, the first thing that comes into my head anyway is this historic term, the scramble for Africa, which I'm sure, as you know well, was a period in the 1800s when the world's great powers were all very excited about grabbing as much land as they possibly could, and everybody was afraid they were going to get shut out of Africa, and this led to immense problems that are still with us today. Is that the kind of scramble you're talking about, only with energy instead of property?
Well, that's a dramatic way of putting it, but it's that set of dynamics. There is a fear of shortage of supply, which builds up. And the steps to actually manage the whole energy system holistically aren't taken. So we talk about three hard truths. One is the demand surge. The other is the struggle for the easily accessible conventional supplies to grow at the same rate. And then thirdly, the environmental stresses.
So what's the other scenario you've got?
Well, the blueprint scenario actually recognizes that forces can combine. You see emerging coalitions coming together at state level, but also cross-border. Just to give you an example of something that was unthinkable not many years ago, a set of interests were recognized amongst technology entrepreneurs and farmers and shrewd politicians, which led in this country in 2006 to the climate-related legislation in California. It's influenced the thinking in several other states. That's influenced the thinking at federal level. So you get this spreading awareness and spreading regulatory activity. And so you get a set of actors who influence the national agendas.
I want to make sure I understand this. You're saying that the state of California or a handful of states or an industry or a city basically say we've got a supply problem, we've got a demand problem, we've got a global warming problem. We need to attack them all at once by diversifying supplies, conserving more, dealing with carbon in the atmosphere.
That's right.
And they're trying to figure out solutions to all these things that work for their local area.
That work for their local area and their local political situation as well. So what then begins to happen is you get a patchwork of standards and regulations beginning to emerge. You don't get global agreements, but you get a critical mass of sectors in a critical mass of countries having, for instance, some kind of carbon dioxide pricing in the blueprint scenario. It grows over time as people recognize the benefits of having it because it is promoting energy efficiency. It's promoting new technology developments as well.
Can I just mention, you've got two scenarios here. One has national leaders reaching out and grabbing resources in the way that they always have.
Grabbing or pushing their own local resources.
Yeah. And the other scenario has local people or corporations or other entities coming up with their own solutions until it creates pressure for even more solutions. Neither of these scenarios seems to have national leaders or the United Nations or somebody getting together in a room and negotiating a treaty that just solves all this thing in the next few years.
Well, wouldn't that be wonderful? if there was an outbreak of global leadership or an outbreak of global altruism that created the conditions for that, that would be wonderful. But we don't think that you need to rely on that.
You don't think it's going to happen. You don't even need to forecast that as a scenario.
So what we look at is, are there forces that can come together to create the same kinds of outcomes?
I want to come back to what you say are basic facts. 7 to 12 years from now and from then on, oil and gas is just not going to provide nearly as much of our slice of energy as it does today. Alternatives are essential. Are you saying that?
Let me put it in quantitative terms. By 2050, you could have, with the development of population and the economies, up to twice as much energy being used as today. So energy is going to grow. Currently, well over 80% of that energy is fossil fuel. And as we look out to 2050, it's still going to be 60%. But there's then a huge amount which is non-fossil on a base
solar
that is
power,
much
wind
bigger.
Solar power, any number of other alternatives.
Yeah, the biofuels, the solar, the wind, the nuclear, all these play a role.
I do want to ask one question that is going to be on the minds of people who are deeply skeptical of oil and gas companies. When you talk with us about alternatives, are you simply trying to provide political cover so that a company like yours can basically go right on selling oil and gas for a lot of money, as you have for many, many years quite successfully?
We've been developing scenarios for 40 years, and we seek to be successful in all the outcomes. That's why we do it. We have a preference for blueprints-type outcomes, and there are two reasons for that.
You mean you prefer for people to be coming up with solutions to global warming in different places?
Not just global warming. It's
and every other energy
demand,
problem.
Supply, and environmental issues together. And the reasons for that is, one, the issues of not dealing, for instance, with the climate risks until late in the period leave you in a much more volatile world in the second part of the century. So it's better for society at large, but also it's better for business and better for investment because there is a smoother transition in dealing with the tensions rather than knee-jerk volatility enforced on you in a few years' time.
Jeremy Bentham, thanks very much.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
A glimpse of the future from Jeremy Bentham of Shell Oil.